If we put our time, our energy, and our thoughts and our effort into the future that we can already see emerging, then we can accelerate the future. And so that's a decision. That is a daily decision. And that is what I call optimism.
Hi, I'm Alana Weston, chairman of Selfridges Group, and welcome to How to Lead a Sustainable Business, the podcast where I speak to the pioneers who are driving us towards a greener future. Today, I'll be joined by one of the world's most influential leaders on tackling climate change, Christiana Figueres. Christiana served as the executive secretary for the UN Framework Convention on Climate Change, and in 2015, spearheaded the monumental Paris Agreement, which saw almost every country on the planet commit to reduce emissions and invest in a sustainable, low-carbon future. After her successes in delivering the agreement, she went on to co-found Global Optimism, a purpose-driven enterprise focused on social and environmental change. Along with Tom Rivett Carnick and Paul Dickinson, she co-hosts the podcast Outrage and Optimism and has co-authored a new book, The Future We Choose: Surviving the Climate Crisis. Christiana grew up in Costa Rica to a highly political family. So to start with, I wanted to get a sense of what kind of conversations she was having around the dinner table and whether that influenced what she does today.
So I did grow up in Costa Rica, at least until I was 16. And then I left. Actually, I left for England because I went to a girls' boarding school in Surrey. But up until I was 16, we did grow up, my two brothers and my sister and myself, in a highly political family. My father was president twice, and my mother occupied several public positions. You asked specifically about conversations at the dinner table. There were none. Because if my father was sitting at the table, the first thing my mother said when she sat down and we had dinner, all six of us together, was, "Children, be very quiet because your father is thinking." Because my father was an introvert and he did not appreciate chatter. He did not appreciate what he felt was just wasting time with inconsequential conversations. So we did not learn values and principles from my parents around the dinner table. We learned it through the example that they set for us. They brought us up to be in service to those who most need our service. And sometimes you learn things from parents because they speak to you. Sometimes you learn from parents because they set the example. In my case, they set the example.
That's fascinating. I love that story. And can you tell me a bit about the example you're setting? Because you reach a hugely wide audience with the podcast across business, students, young people, as well as politicians. What is it that you would like them to take away from the conversations that you're having?
What would we like? Yes, actually, most of our listeners are young people, which I think is delightful, maybe because it's mostly young people who listen to podcasts. But I'm also hoping that it's because young people are thirsty to know what to do. What to do, especially in a time in which there's such despair and there's such grief about us witnessing the death and of so much of nature, so many species that are disappearing, and young people also despairing about their future. What does this mean for their future? And so I think there's a thirst among young people to find out, well, in addition to the anger and the despair and the grief, what else can they do? And that is the message that we put out on our podcast, Outrage and Optimism, because we think that there is a need for both sentiments. I wake up every morning with at least one or two items that I'm outraged about, and they always fall into the category of the delays that we have had for decades on action on climate change. And that delay has meant that we're not at the scale of climate action, at the scale of emission reductions that we should be by now. I also have the discipline to quickly turn that outrage or that concern into optimism. Because here's the interesting thing. We're living in a moment that is characterized by the deepest transition that humanity has ever seen. And so transitions are muddy and disorganized by definition. So we have in the present moment evidence of both the past history, fossil fuels, irresponsible land use management, wasting of energy and of resources, all of that is still present in our day to day, to say nothing of geopolitics. And we also have evidence of the future world, which is actually quite an exciting world. It's a world that has much more green, that has much more local food production, that has cleaner air, that has pollution-free transport. It's a world that has ubiquitous energy generation and access to cheap and clean energy. It's a very different world to the one that we have now. We're beginning to see movement in that direction. Mm. So for us, it's important that people understand that we have to be open to both of these realities. If we put our energy, our effort, and our thinking time into the reality of the past, that is going to take longer to migrate over into the future world. If we put our time, our energy, and our thoughts, and our effort into the future that we can already see emerging, then we can accelerate the future. And so that's a decision. That is a daily decision. And that is what I call optimism.
What do you think are the barriers to change? Is it the shareholder in business? Is it the customer not willing to change? Is there a lack of technology? I don't think so. Is it cultural, either within businesses or within countries? Is it a lack of imagination? These are all of the reasons that have been given as we have these conversations. And I would be curious to understand, A, what do you think is stopping us? And B, what is the best way to unlock the solutions?
Well, I think it's a little bit of everything. It's sort of, you know, like a wonderful vegetable soup where you throw as many vegetables in as possible. And it's a little bit of everything. It is definitely shareholders because we've grown up with this Milton Friedman shareholder primacy and with this myth that in order to be successful, a company needs to provide benefits to the shareholders, period. Well, that is changing, right? We're moving over to stakeholder capitalism, which will take time, but we're already moving. But yes, shareholder primacy has been a problem. The customer, yes, the customer has also been a problem because customers have grown up used to those carbon-intensive products and services. That's what they're used to, and that's what they used to demand. But that's changing. Customers, especially young customers, are being much more demanding and wanting to see goods and services that are low carbon. Technologies, you mentioned. Yes, we have almost all the technologies that we need, but we still need to continue to invest in further technologies because even if we cut our emissions down to zero tomorrow morning, which we won't, we still need to absorb CO2 out of the air, lock the carbon into biomass or into the soil or anywhere else and release oxygen. We still need to do that. But also technologies that will give us alternatives for heavy transport. We have for light transport, we have electricity, but for heavy transport, we still don't have an option. Neither do we have an option for heavy energy industries. So we still need to invest in technologies. The culture, we have grown up in a culture that gives a central place, not just to fossil fuels themselves, but to the fossil fuel financial structure, social structure, transport structure. And so for us to move out of that world and imagine, because you use the word imagination, absolutely important. We have to imagine. Whatever we can't imagine, we can't create. So we have to step out of our culture, out of our thinking, into imagining a completely different world and then help to create us. Now, what you didn't mention, and that is also very present, is vested interests. There are many vested interests in a fossil fuel economy, and they are getting to the point where they realize that they also have to move forward. Now, the question is, there is a bit of all of that, right? Vegetable soup. But what is the water in that soup? What connects all of those ingredients? Mindset. That is what connects all of those ingredients. It is our mindset. And the moment that we change our mindset, the moment that we understand that we do not have to be victims of the past, the moment that we understand that we have the wherewithal, we have the human capacity, we have the innovation capacity, we have the ingenuity, we have the technology, we have the capital to actually thank all of that industry for what they did in the last century and bravely and boldly move into the 21st century. Status quo is our worst enemy. So we have to make the decision that we're going to change our mindset and create first in our minds the world that we want for ourselves, for our children, for our grandchildren, and then move in that direction.
Tell me about how you shift mindset, because I'd be fascinated to learn a little bit about the techniques and what you found successful.
A mindset change is not easy because we are in very, very deeply rooted and established behavior patterns, thinking patterns, acting patterns that we have had and we have practiced for years, if not decades. And hence, they are very, very internalized. They're deeply rooted in us. It's very difficult to get out of something that is so deeply established. But we can do it if we understand that we are living in the most consequential moment in the history of humanity, and that we have basically 10 years minus 9 months to be able to cut the global emissions by one half. And if we don't do that by 2030, we will have condemned ourselves, our children, and all future generations to a world of constant destruction and untold human misery. But if we are able to cut the emissions by one half, then we open the possibility, not a guarantee, but we open the possibility, sort of going through the eye of a needle. And then on the other side, there's the possibility of a world that is so much better that I've just described, right? This green world with ubiquitous energy, with clean air, better health, et cetera, et cetera. This is it. We have 10 years minus 9 months to get our act together. And that's not something that we can do in the year 2029, because then it'll be too late. It's something that we have to decide today, understand the science, understand the implications for every single one of us, and begin to chart our path toward a personal, professional, corporate, city level, all levels, cut emissions by half. We can do it. It is actually easier than anyone thinks to go and figure out what your carbon footprint is and then chart your path toward cutting that in half, whether that is you personally or your corporation or your city or your community, your family, your country. We all have to do it. And it is actually doable. This is the thing. So we have to get it into our brains, into our hearts, into our souls. Wow. What an incredible gift has been given to us by history. Because my parents could not have done it because they didn't have the science, they didn't have the technology, they didn't have the capital. My parents could never have done that. For my children, it will be too late because by the time they get to the decision table, it'll be too late. So it's us. We are the generation that has the power. We're holding the pen of history in our hands. We and only we have the power to open the path toward a world that is so much better, safer, and more just for everyone.
if it does start with the mindset, and I really agree with you that that's what has to change first before all the other opportunities are taken on. Is that something that you're starting to see in the business people that you speak to? Do you see a difference?
I was very moved that way back in 2014 in Davos at the World Economic Forum, I was invited to a conversation by the CEO of a very large oil and gas company. And I thought, oh, how interesting, right? We're 1 year ahead of the Paris Agreement. I wonder why the CEO has asked to meet with me. And he asked to meet with me in the absence of anyone else. He didn't have anybody on his staff. He asked my colleagues to leave the room. And we had a one-to-one conversation that first started out with, you know, what the oil and gas industry was doing or from my perspective, not doing. But then at the end, he said, Christiane, I want you to know something. I am going to turn this company around for the simple reason that I have children and grandchildren. That's why I'm going to do it. Now, that's an amazing statement because here we have the CEO of one of the largest oil and gas companies fully understanding that that sector has the potential to provide a huge chunk of the solution to climate change. And he is doing this because of his children and his grandchildren. I have had frequent conversations just recently in the past 12 months with so many CEOs who have actually told me now, not in private, but in fact, even on our podcast, they have publicly said, I am doing this because when I come home at night, my daughter asks me, Dad, what are you doing about my future? The fact that so many business people have recently touched their own humanity, or let me say, the fact that so many young students and young people on the streets, more than 1 million of them before COVID, have managed to touch their parents' humanity or their grandparents' humanity. We're starting from a different place if that is the ground that you stand on to take decisions.
It's so inspiring hearing you describe it like that. And I guess for business people, I often talk about purpose in the bigger context, but also in the personal context. And I feel here we have that opportunity to have a purpose beyond any purpose that any business person ever had before.
Yes, exactly.
And so how motivating to get out of bed each yes. morning and know that you're taking even a tiny step towards this shared purpose. How have you seen over your career the difference in the way people leading businesses have thought about their purpose?
Yes, yes, yes. Now, so there again, right? I am so grateful to be alive right now because that is one of the things that is changing dramatically, dramatically. And I would say when I was a child, a young person, I would say that most companies, a few exceptions, but most companies were driven exclusively by profit. Thank you, Milton Friedman, for your shareholder primacy. Everyone was following your instructions, right? Now, we're celebrating 50 years of his doctrine. And those 50 years, I think, are 50 years that we can thank him and the corporations that followed that for the benefit that they brought over the 50 years and close that. It's not blame them because actually there was a lot of good that came from that. But the time has come to move beyond stakeholder primacy to stakeholder capitalism, as it's being called, to understand that everyone is a stakeholder here. It's not only shareholders. Everyone is a stakeholder. And to be able to incorporate into every company the triple bottom line, people, planet, and profit. And all three have to be in equal standing. It's not one above the other. For corporations, of course they need to make a profit, but they also need to be actively contributing to social and environmental solutions.
And it feels like whether you're an employee, a customer, or a shareholder, values equal value.
Yes.
In this new economy.
Absolutely.
That's why we need to invest in people and planet, because that's where we'll get the best returns.
Exactly. And the fun thing there is that the market is beginning to show that they have understood that as well, right?
Yes.
Because the companies that in this economic crisis, the companies that do have a triple bottom line, that have that broad purpose, have shown themselves to financially perform better than those companies that don't. So they have demonstrated they have more resilience in times of crisis. And believe you me, we have to develop our resilience.
Actually, I wanted to ask you about resilience, because in your book, you put a refreshing emphasis on mental health and meditation as one way to build ourselves up for these big changes that are coming our way. Could you tell me a little bit about how you think business leaders need to invest in themselves and in their employees in this way, as well as driving the technology and walking the talk in the sustainability sense?
Yeah, I think in this COVID crisis where we've all been locked up, it has never been as clear that mental health and mental resilience is absolutely fundamental. Absolutely fundamental to be able to continue to direct the work that we're all engaged in. This COVID thing has been such a stress test for so many things that we knew we had to do, but now it's really, really clear. And I do think that everyone needs to figure out what contributes to their mental resilience. For some people, it's swimming, hiking. Some people, it's embroidering or singing or dancing or sculpting, whatever it is. Every one of us has a different touch point that we can use in order to cultivate that resilience. We all have to find something that allows us to, first of all, calm down, because we're all under a huge amount of stress. Calm down and just remember who we are and what are we bringing to this world.
Thank you so much, Christiana. It's just been a pleasure speaking with you. And I wish you all the best with all the work you're doing. You're the most amazing galvanizer of people and thought and creativity and hope.
Well, thank you. Thank you very much, Alana. Congratulations on your podcast. And you know, my team would be not very happy with me if I let you go without saying that we have a podcast called Outrage and Optimism that everyone is welcome to listen to, and that Tom Rivett Carnac and myself have recently published a book, The Future We Choose, that has some of the ideas that I have shared with you here on this podcast. So thank you very much for letting me do the pitch that my team would say, you went on Alana's podcast and you didn't pitch either the podcast or the book. So I have to do well by them.
Absolutely, of course. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much. Bye.
If you enjoyed my conversation with Christiana, please remember to subscribe wherever you listen to podcasts. Leave us a review and share it with anyone you think might find this series valuable. This episode was brought to you by Selfridges Group and Radio Wolfgang. The producer was Eli Block, and the production manager was Katie Fuller. Thank you once again to Christiana Figueres. I'm Alana Weston, and this is How to Lead a Sustainable Business.